Thank you so much for talking with me. And we're talking about HJR1, which is making the rounds up here at the Capitol, passed through the Senate Natural Resources Committee this week. I'm a little surprised that this isn't your bill, actually.
Is it Carl Albrecht's bill?
Yeah, it is Carl Albrecht's. Sure, Did he beat you to it? Seems like something you would have been interested in.
Yeah, probably. But yeah. No, Carl's fine. He's from my area down there.
Right, right. Well, I want to talk to you because of an argument you made during floor debate on HJR1. You talked about the number of laws out there that deal with protecting the environment or paleontological resources or artifacts, and essentially you argue that monument designations aren't necessary because these things are already protected. Is that about right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, can you talk about some of those different laws?
So let's say the Antiquities Act of 1906 was specifically put in place by Theodore Roosevelt because of the theft of antiquities that was going on, mainly the cliff dwellers and the cave dwellers. They were just carting those artifacts away, which are heritage to the Native Americans and had special significance, but people were carting them away and stealing them. So since that time, there have been numerous bills that have been passed and legislation with penalties that are far, far greater than the Antiquities Act. The Antiquities Act is a maximum of 90 days in jail and a $500 fine. Whereas if you break the National Historic Preservation Act and the Archaeological Resources Protection Act and the Paleontological Act, you're looking at serious time, up to 2 years in prison, $100,000 fines. You could have two or three fines tapped on top of each other. So if anybody's going to prosecute for antiquities, any of the agencies or the U.S. attorney, they're going to prosecute under these laws. So the Antiquities Act, as far as the penalties, as far as its need, all those have to be identified under the law. Add on top of that a myriad of laws, such as the Federal Land Policy Management Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, the Threatened and Endangered Species Act, Wild and Scenic Rivers, Wilderness Acts, ACCs, Areas of Critical Environmental Concern, Visual Resource Management. There are so many laws out there on the public lands that are stacked on top of each other, the requirement to do what they call resource management plans, 10-year plans, which involves an extensive public process of both private citizens, local government, state government, federal government, other agencies. It requires consultation with Native American tribes. Any kind of an action under National Environmental Policy Act requires full consultation with the Native Americans. You have the Native American Graves Repatriation Act. You have the Utah Graves Act, which I passed. These all protect artifacts. So that's why I said that on the floor.
Okay. I want to talk about Native American involvement in this because you just mentioned a number of laws that directly involve Native people. Some of the arguments being made on that side of things include not just antiquities, not just objects. It's the way that Native people have a connection with this land. And, you know, in the case of Bear's Ears, tribes were able to weigh in and say, you know, this space over here is a place where we pray, or this is sage that we use in ceremonies. So I guess what I'm understanding from this is that the conception of the land is very different here. And the national monuments are a way to look at the land that Native people revere, and it's a tool to protect the land as a whole. So I'm wondering just what do you say to that argument?
Well, again, they're definitely a group of people, and I do represent the Utah Navajo. And in terms of, let's say, the Bear's Ears, I don't know that this issue ever even came up. It didn't come up in the Grand Staircase. The Grand Staircase issue wasn't about, there were no Native American tribes weighing in on it. So let's just talk Bear's Ears.
Sure.
Let's fast forward, okay? I did consult with the elected official, who's Rebecca Benally. She's a Native American. She's the elected official for San Juan County. I talked to different chapters down there, among them the Kaieli and many of the chapters. And so I did consult, and the consensus that I got was that they did not want the designation, that they did not like the designation, for some of the very reasons that you mentioned there, the fact that you're inviting thousands and hundreds of thousands of people to this area, and with very, very little protections on the ground, coming in, no facilities for them, no actual plan in place, and they weren't happy with that. I'm talking my constituents. Now, the Navajo tribe in Window Rock, they had a different perspective. But ever since I've been in the legislature for 16 years, I've been a member of the Native American Liaison Committee. I have very good relations with my constituency, Utah Navajo, and with Rebecca Vannelli, the elected officials. I did have really good relations with the Merry Boys, both Kenneth Merry Boy, former county commissioner, member of the tribal council, and with Mark Merry Boy. Mark Merry Boy gave way to Kenneth Merry Boy, who lost the election to Rebecca Vannelli. He ran again on an open ticket, and he lost again. So my obligation is to look at the elected officials. There was a group of people down there that got together with some organizations, among them the Grand Canyon Trust, the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, that came up with this idea for this national monument. They went back independently, and they were involved with the Obama administration in creating this monument. Just like the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and the Grand Canyon Trust is an independent, small group of people, represented very few people, less than the people I represent in my own district, went forward and made a pitch to the Clinton administration to create the Grand Staircase. So my whole feeling on this is this: there are procedures and processes to go through. One of the most important ones is to deal with state sovereignty and the fact that even though these are public lands, there are specific requirements in federal law and in state law and in our Enabling Act of the state of Utah that they have to go through a process. They don't do it when they create a national monument. All they do is go in and I hereby declare this land 1.9 million acres, 1.3 million acres, a total of 5,000 square miles dedicated to basically a single use. They take away the multiple use, they deal with the grazing, they take away a lot of the access. We're still fighting thousands of miles of roads in the Grand Staircase that are closed down. So it doesn't really give you more access. It doesn't give you more use of the land. It actually takes the land out of public use. So that's my position. I want the people to be able to see the land, enjoy the land, continue to do multiple use on the land, and not have a single designation of this overlying, what I call egregious designation that does nothing to support the type of things that I think people want to engage in on public land. Can't do movie filming in the Grand Staircase. You can't have any commercial activities. You limit severely the things you can do there. We haven't limited hunting yet, but it certainly has limited grazing, because the grazing, they won't let you do any vegetative manipulation. Whereas we have watersheds over here where we're going in and we're treating these areas and doing great work. Some of these things are shown on television now as a response to Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance of chaining. Does great things. It benefits the wildlife, it benefits the watershed, and it's a good thing for the land. We have to take care of the land. We can't just park it and leave it the way it is. We have to go in and do some things with it to protect it and take care of it, which we have done.
Well, it's interesting to me that you brought up Rebecca Vannelli, one of the San Juan County commissioners, because the Navajo tribe has said that, yes, Rebecca Vannelli is an elected official, but she doesn't represent the tribe. And five different tribes have come together and said, you know, this is what we want for this land, for the land that we have cultural and historic connections to. So that's why we've seen in the hearing for this resolution this past week, a number of Native people came and they testified. So and then I just want to bring up kind of to that point on this same floor debate where you were talking about these different laws that protect this land. Your colleague, Representative Angela Romero, mentioned that she feels the indigenous voice has really been left out of this conversation. So I know that you have many constituents who are of Native origin, but I guess I'm just wondering what your thought is on that.
Yeah, I not only have constituents, I have nieces and nephews and grandnieces and nephews that are half Navajo, so I'm pretty familiar with them. A lot of my relatives grew up in the reservation area and on the reservation, so I know quite a bit about it. And Angela and I are very, very good friends. She has Zuni background in her, and I understand that. And she basically talked about the fact that there were promises made to the indigenous people that were not kept. I acknowledge that. Right now, what I would say is this, is that the majority of my constituents, the Utah Navajo, that I represent are not supportive of the National Monument. There may be the tribe in Window Rock that's supported, but let's take this into consideration. Some of the very people now that are saying we need a national monument, when they were in office, i.e. the Mary Boys, they were fighting with the Navajo tribe in Window Rock. There's been a great rift between the Navajo tribe and the Utah Navajo over the Aneth Annex is what it's called, and the oil reserves, where do they go? A percentage of those come back to the Utah Navajo to use for education, housing, job creation, and the Navajo in Window Rock, they want all that money. Thankfully, Congress set it aside for the Utah Navajo, and the state of Utah holds that in trust and allows them to use it for such things as this. So it's not this hunky-dory, happy-go-lucky relationship between the Window Rock Navajo and the tribe, quote, and the Utah Navajo in the different chapters. There's a lot of misunderstanding, disagreements, even between the different groups within those tribes, the different caste systems or what they have. I can't even remember the name that they call it, but you would be from one background. So there's still a lot of confusion there. And you as a white person and me as a white person should kind of stay out of that. But I represent them, and so I listen to my elected official, which is Rebecca Benally. And she's the one elected under the laws of the state of Utah, and that's where this bill was being passed within this state, and she supports it, so that's the person I listen to.
Okay. I think during this hearing, you know, one of the concerns was that the Native people weren't being represented. I mean, we have Angela Romero as perhaps a voice for some indigenous people, but I mean, if you look at the Utah legislature, it's largely white, right? So I guess maybe then another point then is, should the Utah legislature be trying to make this decision about the Antiquities Act?
Absolutely, because it has an impact on all of our, two-thirds of our state has an impact on watershed. When you created this 5,000 square mile, two monuments that were out there, it impacted our school trust lands. Our school trust lands were given to us under patent, just like the property you live on. At one point in time, that might have been Indian country, but now you own it. Do the Native Americans have aboriginal rights to your property? I don't know. Maybe go look back at the deed. That might have been something that was there at some given time. Do they have aboriginal rights on the trust lands for the school children of Utah with the $2 billion trust there? It's a very complicated situation. And when you go in and you say, my aboriginal rights were that through our verbal history and the way we talk, it's been passed down that this area was a sacred site. I understand that. But we still have laws and rules and regulations now that I, as an elected official, have to live by, and so do the Native Americans. I'm not saying they shouldn't have input, and they have great input into what happens on the public lands. But it's the same thing with any law that's out there. It's passed in the legislature. It's an open process. They have an opportunity to come here to weigh in on it, which they did yesterday. We may not agree with them. We may have to go a different route, but there is a process to go through.
Do you mind if I ask you a question about a different topic?
Sure, go ahead. That's fine. No,
okay.
Anything.
I bet you can guess. I'm wondering one more thing. So at the hearing for HJR 1, we also heard your bill, HB 136, and there was a person who was testifying who mentioned the land you owned in Grand Staircase, mm-hmm. Escalante National Monument, or the former boundaries of it. The Western Values Project reports that that land that you own is now outside of the new boundaries that Trump established. So, I mean, last year you had this resolution to shrink the boundaries of Grand Staircase Escalante. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I'll speak to it specifically. Absolutely. The Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, and there's a 40-acre piece of property that is surrounded by the monument. I also have probably another 1,500 acres that's adjacent to the monument. Who is the Western Values Project? Who are they?
Do you mean...
Yeah, who are they?
I assume that there are some lobbyists, probably some environmental-type lobbyists.
I don't know who they are. I just wonder if you knew who they were.
Not personally, no.
Okay. So they made an accusation, and they've said to some effect that I had some input into redrawing the boundaries on a 1.9 million acre, 3,000 square mile monument that was designated by the President of the United States, reviewed by the Secretary of Interior, followed up by the Solicitor of the United States, and that somehow I went in and I said, would you please carve out this little piece around my property? Is that the accusation? I'm trying to figure out what the accusation is.
I don't know who Western Values is.
I don't know who, what values are they espousing, but I would ask you as a reporter that maybe it'd be good, or any reporter that's reported this, why don't you find out who they are? Because I'd really like to know. In my mind, they probably are some organization that has an agenda. It could be an agenda from someone from the former Obama administration. It could be an agenda from someone that was in the Clinton administration. I don't know. That'd be interesting to know. But number one, I will categorically 100% deny that I had anything to do with the boundaries and the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. Specifically, nothing to do with anything that involves my personal property. Why would I want to do that? Number one, many years ago, the Nature Conservancy was actually interested in purchasing that 40-acre piece of property because it's called an inholding within the monument. I have access to it. I have water on it. So someone could actually come in, buy that 40-acre piece of property, and have their little Shangri-La in the middle of a monument with no one ever building around them. It's absolutely a beautiful piece of property. It sits in the bottom of three canyons. There's the Wash coming out of Hell's Bellows and down the Johnson Lakes Canyon. It's an amazing piece of property. This is like 15 years ago, had a value of almost $1 million for that piece of property. So I could have sold it then. I've never sold it. I've kept it right there along with my other property. I still own it. It's in my trust to my children. They also made an accusation that I didn't report it here. A criminal accusation. That's why I want to know who they are. Because as a legislator and a public official, people can say anything they want about me. They can call me names. They can say I have conflict of interest. They can say I did a criminal act. And I have very little recourse. As a private citizen, if they did that, I could go to them and sue them. And I could sue them for defamation of character. And I could get funds out of it. But I can't do that as an elected official. But they can't. There's nothing that I've done that's incorrect. I've reported it. I've talked to the Attorney General's office. They will investigate it fully, and I did nothing wrong. I never had any. There is, and the fact of the matter is, if I approached the Trump administration and said, hey, as long as you're redrawing the boundaries, this is an inholding. You buy inholdings all the time within monuments. Do you want to take this out of it? Do you want to buy it from me or whatever? Because I'd just as soon have property outside the monument because maybe I want to do something with my cows or whatever. But I didn't do it. But I would have perfect justification to do it. So not only do we not know who they are, we don't even know what law I've broken. There's no law that I've broken. I can go as a private citizen, elect an official or anything, and go to them and say, hey, I'd really like you to take this out of the monument because I don't have full utility of my property and full rights to my property. There's no law against that. That's no conflict of interest. I've reported I'd own the property. You can go on the county title plats right now, pull them up, and you can see all the Noel properties, Noel Limited Liability Company and Flood Canyon Ranch Liability Company. It's all right there for anybody to see. So to say that I tried to hide it, I didn't report it, is a lie.
One point to that, though, you said that having your land within the monument, you actually may have been better off. And by that, yeah. I assume you mean financially.
I think it would have utility value for, there's a lot of people that would like to get away from it all. And having a piece of property completely surrounded by a national monument would be something maybe there. I could see being a hotel building on this 40 acres of property. The Sumpton Hotel, you know, the Johnson Canyon or the Grand Staircase Hotel, completely surrounded by the national monument, isolated in a beautiful canyon, red rock country. That could have very, very high value. So to say that I did it for some financial reason, I didn't do anything. They acted. Just like when they created the monument, they never asked me about it. They swooped in and they created a 1.9 million acre monument. The thought process that went into that monument is written right here in this report. Monumental Abuse, the Clinton Administration's Campaign of Misinformation in the Establishment of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. Report on the Committee on Resources, House of Representatives, October 16, 1998. This tells you the whole story of what happened. How much thought did they put into creating the boundaries to protect these artifacts? If you go read in here, it was a very small area that they were talking about up on the Kaparowitz Plateau, about 36,000 acres. And an individual by the name of Ken Raitt, who's now got a big job out of this with another organization, he went in and took a pen and said, let's just rope in the entire Kaparowitz Plateau of 3,000 square miles. And they did it. With no forethought, with no planning, with no the impacts on the school trust land, to private property rights in that area, to access roads, and to over 3 billion tons at the time, not now, low sulfur, high BTU compliance coal. The same kind of coal that we were getting out of Southeast Asia with a group called the Riotti Group, it mentions it in here, that had donated to the Gore-Clinton campaign. It made Clinton's polls rise significantly because he was in a hurt with the environmental community. I say it was a payoff to the environmental community to turn the election so that he would win that election, which he did. And so the report outlines it. I was in it. I was actually working for the Bureau of Land Management. My title was project manager for the Smoky Hollow Mine. The environmental draft EIS is an appendix to this. You can read the whole thing. $10 million, 5 years of study, very minimal impacts, all underground, undersurface, 1,000 feet below the ground mining, no impacts to the surface, 35 acres of surface disturbance. That's what that was about. Now today, in hindsight, coal is a bad thing, according to everybody, because it puts out CO2 and it's making the climate go up 1.5 degrees. But we missed all that would have gone to the school children. We missed 30-plus years of coal resources coming to the state. And we've been burning outside coal. We've burned coal out of Wyoming. But this was compliance. It was called super compliance coal. Low sulfur, low carbon. I mean, not carbon. Low sulfur, low moisture, high BTU coal. It was good coal. So in hindsight, it would have probably not been a bad thing to do that.
I was trying to make the point that you said that you would have been better off maybe having your land in this monument. But at some point you have also advocated against the monument because of economic reasons, saying like the surrounding areas have seen economic demise of some sort due to this.
Yeah,
and you kind of reckon these two?
That's pretty well documented by past county commissioners. You know, I've been in 16 years in the legislature. I represent 7 rural counties. At one time I represented 8, so anywhere from 24 down to 21 county commissioners. 100% lockstep. They've been elected on this. It's hurt our economy because of the way the monument was created and the way it locked up. Right now we have in the state of Utah 15,000 roads in litigation. The first thing the monument did in the Grand Staircase monument was lock up 1,000 miles of existing roads that had been there at least, at a minimum, 10 years prior to 1976, and most of them had been there for 50, 60, 70 years. These are the roads that took you up in the Perea Canyon, that took you back on the Kaparowitz Plateau, that took you over towards 50 Mile Mountain, that took you back in these beautiful places that you read about. But I guess you could get on your bike if it's not in a wilderness area because you can't ride a bike, but you could walk 30 miles to get to where you want to go, or you could use an existing RS-2477 road. These are the roads they're trying to close down. Good report from the county commissioners. So I support my county commissioners. I've been elected 8 times. I've been elected 8 times by almost 70% of the vote. So I represent the feelings and the will and the belief of the people that I represent. They've been very supportive. And their feeling is this, which is a true feeling to me, is that let us be the ones to manage our own future destiny. We've taken care of this land for over 150 years. We've been able to keep it in such good condition that it's eligible for a national park, for a national monument, for areas of critical environmental concern, to go out and harvest paleontological resources out there. We haven't destroyed it. Let us continue to manage it from a local basis with oversight And we'll do just as good a job as we've done for the last 100-plus years. That's been my position. We can run cows, it doesn't destroy it. We can still hunt deer. We can still backpack, hike. Heavens, my five children, and now I've got 48 grandchildren because my wife died, and I inherited another 22 from my new wife, and they love the outdoors. They want to access it. My son's a trail runner. He just ran a 50-mile race last week, and he's run 177 miles with a backpack on his back. Every one of my daughters, three daughters, have run marathon. They love the outdoors, and my constituents love the outdoors. I put a lot of money into trails and recreational opportunities. So the image that the press has tried to place on me is a false image. They first try to demonize you because they've got to demonize you to be able to bring their message across. If they can't demonize you, they don't have a message. If they look at me as somebody that is someone that's responsible about the environment, that's a grandfather and a great-grandfather and basically a pretty good guy, that's a Berkeley graduate from the 1960s, that doesn't play very well. So they demonize me as a liar, a guy that goes in and lies on his report forms, nepotism, whatever terms they can come up with, but there's no proof, and it's absolutely false, the statements they make, but it's very difficult to get an audience and say, here's what happened. Just like I get these filthy letters all the time with just words I can't even say on public radio or anywhere about who I am and who I'm not, but it's okay, it's all part of the job.
Hey now, Representative Mike Noel. It is also important to bring these other positions into the public view as well, right? I mean, Native American people have largely been left out of the conversation for, you know, years and years and years and years. So is it not important to bring that perspective to the table?
Very important. Like I said, I've been on the Native American Liaison Committee. I've sponsored legislation that's very, very supportive of Native Americans, the Native American Graves Repatriation Act. I sponsored a bill last year that allowed for the burial of Native American remains found in a specific area on our state parks. I sponsored education legislation that provided for scholarships and incentives for Native American teachers to stay in their own communities because we find that they they do better with the Native American children if the teacher is Native American. So, like I said, I've got four nieces and grandnieces and nephews because my wife's brother married a full-blooded Navajo Indian right off the reservation. So I do have a strong support system for Native Americans. My brother also married a part Cherokee Indian. She's about 1/8 Cherokee, and all the two nephews are both dark skinned. So I'm one of the first people, being a military brat, that really believed in the desegregation of the South. I lived in the Deep South when I was a young boy, when they had white drinking fountains and colored drinking fountains and white bathrooms and colored bathrooms. So when people call me racist, it really hurts me because I've never been racist in my life, ever. 100% colorblind when it comes to people of color. That's why Angela Romero is one of my best friends in the legislature. We don't see anything alike, but she'll tell you right now, I love Mike Noel or any of the other people in there that are people of color. I have never discriminated against them. I support their, I know they've had a tougher time because of their origin, and the Native Americans have had an even different and more difficult time. But I still have to live by the laws and of the country and the laws of this state, which I do, and I'm an elected official. I do that. Do it to the best of my ability. Not perfect, but that's what I do.
The very last point I want to make, I promise. I swear I could probably talk to you for 2 hours.
No, it's fine.
98% of Navajo chapter houses in Utah support the original designation of the Bears Ears National Monument. What do you have to say to that? Because you bring up Rebecca Benally, who does not support it, and the only chapter house, the only Navajo chapter house to vote both for and against the Bears Ears National Monument is the Aneth chapter house.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a chapter house?
I haven't. I don't have a car.
I've been to all of them,
okay? Take a bus down there.
Yeah, I've been to all of them, both in my district and outside of my district, in Utah and in Arizona. When you say the chapter house support it, there's a whole bunch of people in those chapter houses, but when they come to a meeting, you might have 10 people in there, and seven may support it, and three may not. So the numbers I go by is who is their elected official when it comes to state policy, and it's Rebecca Benally. And so I listen to her, and I've been down to those chapter houses, and I get a very warm welcome. I don't get a lot of people in there, you know, I hate your guts, you're doing this, you're doing that. So I don't know. I just have to tell you that I would question that statistic. 98% of the chapter houses, there may have been a vote at one time. At one time, 98% of the chapter houses supported Kenneth Maryboy, but he got beat by Rebecca Benally. 98% of the chapters reported him wanting him to be the representative on the tribal council, but he got beat by another Navajo. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't understand all their politics. They're a lot different. You know, there's a rift now between the Utah Navajo Congress and the Speaker of the House there, and with the President. I mean, it's politics. That's what happens, and there's struggles back and forth for who's going to be in control. So it's a very complicated situation on the reservation, and I'm not saying I understand it all, but neither does any one person or any reporter can just sit here and say 98% of the people support the Bears ears. I don't believe that. I really don't.
Do you think I just made that up?
No.
I didn't just make that up.